Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and we are going to discuss Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian, Practical. the colons always make me happy, but there's something about practical. Practical really lands the colons. Anyway, I'm excited to talk. Are you excited to talk about the practical, Ken?
Well, practical. Oh, you know what? You're reading my notes. This is actually called the process.
Oh, you're right. It is the process, and which is even better. Everybody, the colon process.
Yeah, and we're gonna leave that in there because the force sometimes guides you through mistakes. I realized I didn't check my title of my notes, and that's a lesson that Yoda would give you. Failure on your notes. So that's me. But the process, which does include a lot of practical, or at least it ends up being practical, because they go through so much VR and animation previs to get to it. And that was pretty insightful. But Joseph, I got to start here and tell you and tell the audience, there were many times that I just was lost during this episode.
Yeah, there's a section where there is Jon Favreau is saying many words that are very technical. And I'm like, I'm with you. You lost me. I'm with you. You lost me. I'm with you. You lost me.
This funny thought. So we record the show early Monday mornings. On Sunday yesterday, obviously so much going on, everything, and just a little self-care is always good no matter what's going on, not putting my issues over anyone else. But I just kind of stepped outside the house in my car for a little bit and drove around the city. And I passed the Los Feliz golf course, the little 9-hole golf course over there where some of the scenes of Swingers were shot, right? The Favreau movie. One of my favorites, and Favreau wrote it. His first big break, Vince Vaughn, yay, Ron Livingston. And I just was laughing. I was like, that Swingers guy grew up, and he was already in his mid-20s, right, at late 20s there, grew up to be this real smarter-than-me tech wizard on things that I don't understand. And kudos to John. You would not have gone back to, what, 96 and been like, that guy is going to help revolutionize how you shoot movies by gathering around people smarter than him to make it possible. And I was like, okay, I like this episode. The process worked for me.
Yeah, imagine watching Swingers and then immediately saying, that guy's going to make an all computer graphics version of The Lion King, and it'll help him make a Boba Fett TV show.
Right? Go back to 96 prior to the special edition to be like, what now? A TV show. Okay. Star Wars TV. So from that point, we're going to dive into this episode. And yeah, it was short, 19 minutes. Actually, overall, just some thoughts on the lengthy episode. And we're going to get into what was covered, Joseph. But did you have any thoughts on that when you settled in for your viewing? And we're like, oh, this is like a infomercial.
Yeah. No, I was surprised when I paused to think about something, and then that's when I see on Disney Plus the length, and I was like, oh wow, this is shorter. Yeah. And I did really enjoy the episode, but despite me not doing due mental diligence and saying practical, this I think that this being about process, there are definitely parts of the process that I was interested in, but the fact that a lot of it wasn't practical, that did get into the tech side. There's definitely some really interesting things to me, but I feel like it felt a little bit more on the technical side than some of these other episodes that have really managed to make the technical discussion also be real great jumping off points for larger thoughts about Star Wars. Some of this felt just straightforward technical, which was interesting, but different.
Yeah, and equally as valuable to everything that's going on, and we have some great stuff to discuss, but yeah, I was kind of with you too. And the link doesn't necessarily bother me. I mean, they've been, in 25, 30 minutes, but Grace and I usually watch a show like Friday night after our day, work and working out, and we gather, we have some food and a snack, maybe pour a drink. Let's watch The Mandalorian, and we were like, man, our food's not even going to be done warming up by the time this is done. So we watch some other stuff, which, hey, is also valuable. But maybe telling that they were like, let's go a little shorter on, all this behind the scenes stuff. But I do want to jump in because they start with the classic clip from New Hope, Han Solo, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Luke Skywalker, the cantina, and we know it. And then Favreau talked about the influence of Star Wars being his entry into all of those things, the things that influenced Star Wars. We know a lot of the classics, either specific Kurosawa films or genres and all those kind of things. So I guess I want to start there, Joseph. Did Star Wars do that for you?
Yeah, I think so. Not as much directly toward the film inspirations that Mandalorian is drawing from and that they focus a lot on this episode. I'm not a super expert on Kurosawa, and I definitely like Westerns, and I've watched a lot of Westerns with my dad, but Star Wars wasn't a jumping off point to those things for me. I think Star Wars was really a jumping off point to me, again, being a kid of that era. There weren't as many sci-fi, fantasy, just bizarre flights of fancy into a totally other world. And I think that's what it did for me, is I was always excited when any show or storytelling wasn't just real humans in a suit in boxy cars, being lawyers or whatever. So I think Star Wars really led me to search that stuff out. So, it made me even more interested in superheroes. It made me eventually find Doctor Who and, like, honestly, Twin Peaks, when it starts to go into Dale Cooper's dreams and other dimensions. Star Wars really made me always want to explore that other world. I think in terms of inspirations for Star Wars, what I did discover kind of out of an outshoot of being interested in Star Wars and then realizing that Star Wars was built on it is listening to old radio serials. Mm. And, there are lots of horror stuff, lots of science fiction stuff, lots of cliffhangers. And through that, discovering The Shadow, and then discovering, oh, this is what actual pulp novels were like and about. This was the aesthetic and that sense of the adventure serial, and eventually getting not even DVDs. I think we rented VHSs of the original Flash Gordon serials and watching them and going, oh, wow, this is Star Wars. So it definitely took me in lots of different directions.
Yeah, I'm glad you discussed that, honestly, about where it takes you, because I'm in the same boat, and I didn't, at some point I forget along the way when you come either of a certain age and you start kind of learning more about the pop culture, and you're not just a 10-year-old on the playground, you're a 12-year-old reading a book, right, or about behind the scenes, and you're starting to take it all in. Yeah, you learn some of the influences, and I think sometimes, so like the Kurosawa stuff comes all up all the time, Hidden Fortress specifically, right? I think sometimes you have to be careful how you phrase that to people who are maybe younger and learning this for the first time. Because I sometimes, especially by the time I got to film school stuff in the mid-90s, where it was kind of like, because I didn't have an encyclopedic knowledge of Kurosawa films, I was looked down upon a little bit. Like, oh, you like Star Wars, but you don't. And I was like, no, I saw it on VHS. It was cool. I like Star Wars. and that's okay. And then you see with like Favreau, it inspired him into a career in film that is very, you know, that's built on that kind of stuff. He is this film guy, a cinephile, if you will. So I think it can go all ways. And I'm glad you went. I think you and I are relatively similar, where it was like I was influenced by, wow, you can have these worlds, and those are the stories I was not only gravitated to, but then that I wanted to do myself, right? And along the way you learn the influences, and it's important. I don't want to sound like it isn't important to learn the influences. It is, but it sent me, Star Wars sent me into a one direction, you know? And yeah. Also, you know, I was going to say, what are the ones that maybe we gravitated to if there's some specific styles? I am a fan of Westerns, not all of the classic Westerns. I know people don't consider the Young Guns movies true Westerns. I'm fine with that. I consider them to be the greatest two movies of all time. But no, so there's some connection to that, because also Han Solo is my favorite guy. They even talk about it here. Han is the classic gunslinger. So yeah, that makes sense. That tracks for me, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hear everything you're saying, and I have really had it on my list to make it a priority to watch more Kurosawa out of my own curiosity, and also to be fully rounded. And, you know, since the podcast that we do here with Jennifer has become such a big part of my life in such a way that I celebrate, that I want to be more knowledgeable than I currently am about Kurosawa. So I definitely want to do that. But I think what's interesting to me about this discussion is The Mandalorian really picked up on this thread of Star Wars, that Han Solo, Boba Fett thread, which is about Western. I mean, the samurai, I think, extends to both the Jedi side of it and the sort of bounty hunters with honor side of it, for sure. But there are lots of other influences. I think we're celebrating those a lot, but I think that's part of the power of Star Wars, is there are so many influences. And for me, I say, you know, to the point where, you know, fans, listeners of Force Center have put it on a bingo card, pulpy adventure serial, because that's the part of it that I gravitated toward. That's what clicked for me when I was like, oh, wow, that's why they go from one problem to the next. It's not just to show their character growth. It's an aesthetic choice.
Yeah. Right there with
you. That comes from these sources, you know?
Yeah, right there with you. And I want to, I'm with you too. And like, especially with what we discussed here, it's like I love looking back. I'm fascinated by what George, took from. And I don't mean that in a negative sense, but just like, hey, this is what I loved, and this is what I'm going to build it on. And the samurai films seem to have the same soul. And a lot of the other stuff, the action and the aesthetic maybe goes to the Western side. And I think it's all great. Which is why, Joseph, is kind of interesting that John, as I call him sometimes in our notes, Johnny Favs, said that he pitched this as a story that, yes, should be consistent with Star Wars, that he wanted it to be built on the things that influenced George. And I think that's apparent, and I think you can see it right from the start. How do you feel about that choice?
I think that's really good. I think there's been, you know, that quote and that idea going around that that George Lucas was influenced by all of this storytelling that came before him. But some of the people who are making Star Wars now can sometimes be seen as just being influenced by Star Wars. And I think that old Johnny Favs was trying to be aware of that so that Star Wars doesn't start feeling like a sort of a second, third generation analog copy of itself. I think that's great. I've mentioned this before, but the kind of important seminal comic book writer, Marv Wolfman, wrote the Teen Titans, Crisis on Infinite Earths, a bunch of different stuff for Marvel and DC. I went to a panel of his once, and he talked about getting into the business of comic book writing, and everybody now, all the younger generation coming up behind him, always wants his opinion and kind of thumbs up. Mm. And he's keeps saying, that's just so weird, because I got into this because I saw comic books and said, I want to make Green Lantern do something different. And I always think of that. And I think it is good to absolutely have reverence and understanding for what Star Wars is. Mm-hmm. But also that desire to put your own imprint on it somehow. And if that's the way Favreau was approaching this of, I love the stuff that George loved, so what if I pull from that in my own way, is his way of putting his own stamp on it and not repeating what is already exists in Star Wars.
Yeah, and it's a fine line. My follow-up to that is, hey, you know, is this present in other modern Star Wars projects? And that's where the fine line comes up, because you're right, you're a Star Wars fan, you grew up a Star Wars fan, now you get to make a movie, and holy crap, it's a Star Wars film. You're going to try to make a Star Wars film, and I don't think anyone's faulted. But I think a lot of it is there. Rian Johnson is an absolute cinephile. This guy is, you know, a Turner Classic Movie subscriber. Yeah.
He was, yes, he is.
He was friends with my pal Leach Malone, and I got, you know, they would talk all the time years before he got Star Wars. He would just, hey, I love what you said about this classic movie. And you know, he's a film nerd. I use the term nerd very obviously respectfully here. So it's there. I think it's there, but also I think you can't separate sometimes that it is, how do we make this Star Wars? I love that Favreau says it has to be a story consistent with Star Wars. Do you think in the other modern projects, what do you think about that fine line and where it falls?
Yeah, I think for other projects, I think we get to hear about it a lot in interviews, and you can see it. I think Rian Johnson absolutely pulled from all sorts of different films. He talked a lot about Kurosawa and showing samurai movies to the whole team working on The Last Jedi. He's right. Talked about the aesthetic of Snoke's throne room being inspired by the Red Room from Twin Peaks and things like that. I think he was really pulling from lots of different ideas. I know there are some fans who probably will disagree with this, but for me, The Rise of Skywalker, I can feel that dedication to adventure serials of, we're really going to keep our foot on the gas, and it's going to be one problem after the other, and we're going to try to go for bigger, weirder things. Like, oh, you sink through the quicksand and discover a snake. That's really something you would have seen in a Saturday matinee. And I think also in Rise of Skywalker, introducing a little bit more of that sort of archaeologist and uncovering a mystery type aesthetic. So I think even in big modern, in their elements of horror too, that whole first scene with Kylo getting to Palpatine is all shot like I mean, that seems like James Whale could have directed that back in the day, making Frankenstein. So to me, I think there is a lot, even in the sequel trilogy, that is pulling from other sources. I think where this discussion maybe gets kind of ambiguous is, for the sequel trilogy, a part of the story of the sequel trilogy explicitly is the characters dealing with the original trilogy characters having become a myth. Yeah. So it's a part of the story that those are struggling to move beyond the ideas of the original trilogy, because that's literally the story.
It's speaking back to the fans, right? Yeah. I keep saying fine line, because you're going to find, like you said, a lot of examples. I remember the first time seeing Rise of Skywalker, and I'm like, this is like Indiana Jones. Like, and I loved it, and some people didn't, but I think it's there, and I think you got to give it more credit than it is, but also on these big movies. But Favreau talks about in some of the other episodes of, hey, this is the Ewok adventures of the modern times. We get to play in these margins, and the movies have to answer to something bigger and different. And I guess my final kind of thoughts on this segment is he got what he could do with this format, a streaming television show on a service that had not yet launched. Like, let's take it a little different way. Let's have our time. We have a little more time to do things a little differently. The shots, the pacing, everything. I remember first couple episodes, I think our pal Hector Navarro tweeted something out of like, I was worried that I was getting bored with the first couple episodes. And I realized, no, they just have more time. And I'm not used to this pacing, and that excites me. I'm paraphrasing him, but I remember seeing that going, yeah, that works for me because it's totally different. And I think Favre, this kind of shows me how he got it, you know, how to even frame the shots, like Lone Wolf and Cub, and this and that, like, and they got to do that because they had the time and the different format.
Yeah, yeah. I think my final thought on this discussion is I do really like that Filoni was also highlighted and in the process talking about how much they discussed the big ideas and going along with Johnny Favre saying he wanted to be consistent with Star Wars. I do think I commend that idea of what can we do different with Star Wars? What can individual artists bring that's new from their perspective? But I do appreciate that Filoni, and honestly, this whole Disney Gallery Mandalorian series has made me appreciate it more, that he is really the holder of the big thematic and moral picture of the entire Skywalker saga. And there was even like a very subtle mention of that when they were interviewing Filoni, and he was saying, yeah, John would say, have you seen this Western? I'd say no. And I'd say, but maybe we should look at this trilogy a little bit more closely. And like, I don't think he was talking about a Western trilogy. I think he was talking about, yeah, let's absorb all the Western stuff, but let's also make sure that we reexamine what Star Wars truly has been.
Hey, the man with the cowboy hat, man, he knows his stuff. We sometimes tease him here, but we love him. He knows his stuff. And that's just the beginning of the show. We got 17 more minutes to break down, Joseph. Now, we go into the section called The Process, and I wrote up a question I'll probably read, and I don't know if it conveyed what I was trying to say. So, you know, through the power of Rodecaster and USB cords, we're just going to play this clip that started the process segment. Richard Bluff was the guy there. Was the animation supervisor? Yeah, no, Hal Hickel's the animation supervisor. Richard Bluff kind of prompts Kathleen Kennedy to talk about this new process, new capabilities, and it's fascinating. And so we're going to hear it right now.
It was the first week we were on the volume, and you and I were sat next to each other, and I think I asked you the question, what's been the most eye-opening part? And I think what you'd mentioned is that you can go into editorial and you can see the story better and clearer.
Yes.
And I think you were maybe referencing...
And that makes storytelling much tighter.
Yeah.
And the closer we get to that animation process where you can iterate on story longer.
Right.
There's a permanence to live action
that
requires that when you're on that set, doesn't mean you can't go back and reshoot certain things, but for the most part, what you're doing is permanent.
Yeah.
And then you have to move on. And anything about the process that allows you to iterate longer on story that's gonna make for better movies.
It forces the filmmakers to commit early and understand and fail early when it's cheap and easy. And that's what you learn from animation, because going all the way back to...
So there you go. Thank you, Johnny Fives. So that was fascinating to me, Joseph, because first of all, she definitely understands the process of making films. and making stories. But in my awkward question that I was working on here is just, you know, it's this focus on seeing the story better, meaning more time can be spent developing story in live action before they get to set, because we hear, and they mentioned stuff, that reshoots to come up, but we heard all these stories. This was never really a problem. It's just now that the movie news industry is more on a minute-by-minute cycle, and you hear more, and, oh, reshoots. And you know what? Sometimes you've said before, that's huge problems. Other times it's so normal, so much part of the process. But I like what she's saying here, Joseph, that look, this new process, this game engine technology, this VR, and we hear a little bit later, Deborah Chow got 2 months of prep on a TV show versus 8 days. that means you really got to handle the story. And it's clicked of like, oh yeah, because, you know, animation, Rebels, Clone Wars, it's a similar process. And those stories definitely seem all locked in, if that makes sense. So I really liked it. It made sense. And she says it much better than me.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, that they showed us this process, that they did script, they did storyboards, then they did this sort of video game level pre-visualization. And I think what they're really getting at here is that they have a kind of round after round of an ability to analyze the story and get into sort of minutia of little beats of those moments that you think are absolutely essential. When you pull it all together, you see that they aren't, or you see that, wow, hey, we have this one scene where Mando seems pissed, but wait, if he seemed sad, that would change everything for the better. Right. And to me, as a creator, iterate can sound like a just kind of corporate weird talk word. But for me, my view on creation is that it is half extremely technical and it is half extremely intuitive. And I feel like what this is saying is they're allowing for more time for both. Like they are building the house, the structure, and then they have a lot of time to play with the interior decorating as well. And that they're both of those parts of the process are equally important. And I think sometimes from the outside, there can be in the discussion of the creative process, there can be this sort of attitude that if you're a good writer, you should just write it good and it should be right the first time. And I don't think that's honest to the creative process. You want to build something in there, tear it down and then add a sunroom and then paint it blue and figure out that's what it's always needed to be. And that's what suddenly makes it what it is. And giving themselves the time and the room to do that makes a better story.
Yeah. Well said, as our t-shirt will soon bingo. Would the follow up here, Favreau, of just allowing the directors to say this when the budget was a little lower, or you know, the cost it's a cheaper part of the process. That spoke to me too, because the budgets are the reality, and that's often what happens. And then you know, this incident, I love the Last Jedi of like Luke winking at 3PO was an on-set kind of discussion of character. I love you, I know, is the most famous one. So you have to allow for that. And I think they allow for it here, but they are going to, it's going to be smoother, which to me excites me, because it does make these stories feel a little bit more complete, intact, impactful. Not that the movies aren't, but you know what I mean? Like all of them get to be on board, and I think it excites me for what can come, and then be a little lower cost, whether or not everything's going to look like this or be shot on the volume, all those kind of things. It could lower some production costs, which will you can use those elsewhere for designs and whatever, to catering. I don't care. and that's why this episode, The Process, was an exciting episode, as short as it was. So I'm stumbling through that because I don't have the knowledge Kathleen Kennedy or John Favreau do on it, but that spoke to me. I got that clip. I was like, ah, I see now why this isn't just really cool and look what we can do when we can move it forward. Technology, yay. This is actually going back to the beginning. It helps with story.
Yeah. I think it must really help to go, well, we know what we want to say this episode about Mando, and like just looking at this action, looking at this shot, looking at this angle, does it say it, you know?
Yeah. Does it say it? And I mentioned the Rebels and Clone Wars things. Does this make you think differently about those properties versus the films? Where sometimes, and even for me, sometimes the story beats don't work as well. And that's because, you know, I've been watching a lot of Last Jedi again. Everyone knows I love that movie. I sometimes go through some of the Canto Bite stuff and, you know, maybe if they had it's natural. It's natural to have those questions. And you as Star Wars fans shouldn't feel bad if you every once in a while something pops up of a movie you love. But you go to Rebels. Clone Wars is so sprawling. You know, you can, you know, if you don't like Meeber Gascon, you don't like Meeber Gascon. But in rewatching, I'm in middle of rewatching season one of Rebels. This makes sense now. Like, oh, this is why animation sometimes is looked at differently by fans, probably of a lot of things, because you have more time to get every story beat you want mostly right, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like you have, in general, more passes to go, is this really what I want? And I think that's also about seeing it. I think that's a big part of it, too, because you can do massive passes on scripts, but you really don't truly know what something is until you can kind of see it in a way. It's a visual medium. And I think you're totally right that even if, as a fan, you're sitting back and you like a choice or dislike a choice in Rebels or Clone Wars, you are probably seeing something that has had an extra pass of being analyzed by the creators. I think there's also just with the storytelling between the animated series and the movies, like you're saying, with not just with Meeber Gascon, but, you know, even a really important episode of the Clone Wars, that's one moment, right? Mm-hmm. Out of many for Anakin Skywalker, whereas you go to Revenge of the Sith and like, that's the moment, you know, it's the movies right now are these bigger moments for the characters. So I think it feels even more high stakes for viewers.
Absolutely. Yeah. You make me think of how many times have you gone through a script read through with a script, you know, is sharp. And then you get to the read through and you're like, oh, no, nothing landed. It's just part of the process. So it's great. Any final thoughts on this segment, Joseph? We'll take a quick break. But I said, I'm a man. I got lost in a lot of the tech talk, though. It was fun to watch, fun to see the animatics and all those kind of things. Some of that stuff I'm familiar with from developing an animated show over the years, and it's fun to just see it in that kind of raw form. But any other final thoughts here before we take a break?
I think my final thought on seeing the level of pre-visualization that they were able to do is funny to me, because now it looks like, oh yeah, that's kind of a crude animation, but like, it also doesn't look that crude to me. Like, if I saw that level of animation of a Mandalorian kicking ass in like a video game in 2001, I would have been like, my God, it's beautiful.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Great designs. I recently discovered GoldenEye for Nintendo 64 was in my storage, and I'm like, if you that previz of the Mando fight in the hallway would have blown it away.
Oh my God, that video game! So many years of my life have been given to GoldenEye 64. Oh, yeah.
No slappers. All right, we are going to take a quick break here on the Mandalorian Report, and when we come back, we'll finish up this episode and we get confirmation, we think, of something we wanted for season 2. Stick around. This is Force Center.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Hey, 4 Center fans, don't forget 4 Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's 4 Center on YouTube. Check it out.
All right, welcome back to the Mandalorian Report here on 4 Center. We are taking a look at episode 14, The Process, which, yeah, you know what? Sometimes use some terms that I went, huh? Just show me the lightsabers. But exciting stuff nonetheless, and we're taking a dive on into this here. The show went on to discuss, so we got Jon Favreau and Taika Waititi talking about their experiences with Marvel reshoots and how effective and efficient they are. And I just wanted to put that in there because, again, to highlight that often you hear that term reshoots, and I think everyone in the 4 Center audience definitely knows by now from us, you know, and they knew themselves. I don't want to sound like you didn't. Just like, hey, calm down on that word. But also, I was blown away, especially what Taika was talking about, of like 360 setups and shots in like 5 days is massive. So if you can start shooting a show like that, that helps Star Wars. That helps the story, Joseph.
Yeah, yeah. I thought there was a bunch of great stuff in this really little section. Taika's very funny, so he can say like kind of some straightforward stuff and make it real entertaining. But I also just really liked what he was saying, because to me it spoke again to the process of creating, how he's talking about in principal photography, he'd be into that more sort of dreamy and intuitive side of things, of like, ooh, what could we possibly discover in this shot of a glass of water? But then during the reshoots, he's in that much more technical, you're building a house and you need to make sure that you have all of the, you know, support beams in the right place. Like, bam, done, got the shot. And so I like that further kind of reinforcement of what was being discussed. But I also took to be what they were saying is those reshoots happen in those big movies because you they're not entirely pre-viz, so you can't entirely see the movie until you have that first rough cut. And basically what they're saying is before any like actual live action camera rolls, we can already see the whole thing. So we're not going to necessarily be doing those things like the entire movie will fall apart unless we get a reshoot of a cup.
Yeah. Get those cups, people. Right in those cups. Yeah, it was just a great little moment. Yeah, you're right. Tyke is so funny. Even the talking about a reshoot of a cup, it ends up being highly entertaining. Deborah Chow went on to describe making the street standoff in episode 3. And it was still shot in 3 days, which is not a lot with some follow-up shots. So despite the process, they still don't have the same amount of time as a big budget film. Does this again kind of highlight, make you appreciate some of the bigger set pieces in the show that they were able to pull us off with the volume, the process, and still not having all the budget and the time they needed?
Yeah, no, and I liked what she said about it's still Star Wars, so no matter what, we still have to kind of go for these big action moments. And man, did that one land with people, I think, not just as an action moment, but as, you know, kind of a fever dream that some Star Wars fans have had for an extremely long time of live action Mandos flying in and going to town. And they did successfully.
Did you like seeing the Mando on like a forklift?
Yes.
A high lift.
I loved it. And I really love that detail that even with all of that planning, they almost ran out of Zerk hits, I think she said, yes. And talked about like, well, we couldn't get any more because there is a limit. It's, you know, a kind of ammunition. So there is a limit to how much we can legally buy. So yeah. I think that really was cool to hear. And it goes back to something that I don't think I fully understood when it was said in a previous episode, when I think it was the volume episode when Rick Famuyiwa was talking about how Johnny Favs was coming through and trying to talk him into like, well, just play. You can play in the volume. And Rick Famuyiwa had said, but we spent all this money doing the pre-visualization. And I was just trying to get the shot that we already decided on. But yeah. You still want me to play? Okay. And I thought of that quote from the previous episode when I was listening to Deborah Chow talk about practically shooting the action scene, that there are still, even at that point, going to be moments of discovery.
Yeah, because you know, to me, it's like you've bought yourself a little bit of time and money to maybe redo it again. They're shooting this in 3 days, and that might be somewhat normal for a television show, but not for the movies. But you know, like I like that. I love that these episodes are doing such a great job of rolling out every single part that went into this show. And for someone like me who has been on the record of like, I didn't like everything how it looked in the volume, or I didn't like that space fighter. You know, there's some things that I along the way, I'm getting a better respect for it. And I'm seeing the process. And again, excited about where you go with this, because this is just the first one through the door. And that fight scene, that episode 3 fight scene is great. It is very practical. It was mostly shot on a back lot. Like, it's all the things that I might love traditionally, but it's fueled by these new processes. And I like that a lot. It's good to see, especially those high lifts with the Mandos on them.
Yes.
John Favreau talked about this process being a dojo that allowed for him, the directors, and all the other people involved to really begin to form how to do this. So like I said, we've now been exposed to this process as a specific look and feel. Again, going to some of the things that either I loved or didn't like about it, it's got a feel and look. So how do you feel knowing, if you were to know, because it hasn't been said, but if you were to know that they took this process, including the volume, and applied it to Kenobi or Cassian Andor or even a theatrical release, any thoughts on that right now? Again, it's only going to get better, but would that change your mind on any of these projects or taint your view or anything? Not to get negative, anything like that.
No, I mean, I think the only thing, if I will I allow myself to just open the window and check in on the dark side, mm-hmm. I think that especially now that we've kind of seen how it's all done and how it is really impressive, but there is a part of me that feels like I want the movies to feel bigger than the television shows.
Yes.
And I think that there is that little bit for me of like, I can see now how you might be able to make a really awesome Star Wars movie using the volume. But I also can start to see like, oh, wow, there's lots of imaginative ways to use it. But now, especially that we know the technology, we might as fans be able to see some of the limitations as well. And I wouldn't want that to change how I saw a movie. So a little dance with the dark side with concern about that for a movie. For Cassian Andor and Kenobi, this process in the dojo comment that you pulled out really makes me excited. Mm-hmm. Because there's been so much reporting and discussion about changes in writers and showrunners and scripts being revised, and that's all part of the process. I think that's understandable. But seeing all these creators and hearing a word like dojo, I do think that creative projects do need like a kind of final director or a final architect, the way Johnny Favreau clearly is. But I think at this point in the storytelling, especially Kenobi and Cassian that are connected to all sorts of other elements and ideas in history of Star Wars, I really appreciate the communal approach that there are lots of different people contributing to the ideas and a lot of people to go, does that feel new? And does it feel traditional and old in the same way, in the way that Star Wars should always feel new and old? That it made me really feel even more optimistic for the storytelling of Cassian and Kenobi being both new and also being respectful to Star Wars, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Yeah, no, I think it's the best way to say it. And this whole kind of, this whole series, but this particular moment, why I pulled it out, I think it's part of Favreau's strengths. I think that's definitely one of the traits of being a good leader is surrounding yourself with, I could say it jokingly, people smarter than you, but just it helps to have someone in the center kind of leading the ship, but also all the people can come to this table and can work and feel supported and feel creative and try new things. And Favreau is smart enough to know to get out of the way. And I think that time and time again, even though he loves his dinner, dinner for five shows, and sometimes dominates the conversations or has a funny joke or cuts some people off. I can tease him on that as a fan, but yeah, I keep at the end of every episode, I go, this whole thing's in good hands with him and Lucasfilm, Kathleen Kennedy, everyone above him. But I love that about it. The dojo thing did stick out to me for that. It's a good training place to build and grow.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree. I think he is clearly, it's fun to spend some time because I'm aware of Dinner for Five, not the sitcom that I keep accidentally calling it. Not sitcom, you know what I mean. Anyway, it's clear that he is a strong personality who knows what he wants, but it's so cool to see that what he wants is to collaborate. And when he was talking about this, he was saying, like, some of you thought maybe I was just saying my vision to you, but actually I had heard this from Deborah, so that I added that on to what I thought, and then I said it to Taika, and then so he keeps celebrating the fact that this is a many voices at the table project, and that's really cool.
Yeah, and I love it. And I hesitate to even say this, Joseph. Okay, I hesitate to even say this. Should Kathleen Kennedy ever decide that she no longer wants to run the studio, his name now, I don't have a negative reaction. I didn't before, but I'd be like, the guy did Swingers. Now look at this. I go, okay, he definitely has been all these big budget movies. He understands it, and more importantly, understands when to get out of the way, which I think is something Kathleen Kennedy does well as well. Does good as well. I don't want to start that. I'm not starting that conversation, but I'm like, okay, he could be one of those choices for me now as a fan. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think his celebration of trying to, give other people the tools they need to be creative, I think means that he is not just a great creator himself, but he is showing those producer skills that I think get lost in that conversation of, whenever Kathleen Kennedy chooses to pass the baton to somebody else. I think sometimes as fans, we can confuse the creative side of that versus the producer side of that. And I totally agree that he is showing those producer philosophy skills that excites me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, excite is a good word to use. Wrapping up here on this episode, we got some Rick Famuyiwa stuff here. And this one's kind of I thought of you a lot in this year, and I wanted to go into this here. He described making the Mando versus the Republic droid fight in episode 6. Now, Joseph, this was one of your favorite episodes, and specifically, if I do recall, one of your favorite sequences because of what we learned about the Mando in it through his actions and how he went about fighting the droids. And it wasn't just a just an action sequence to be an action sequence. So knowing that Familia got to spend so much time prepping it with Latif Crowder and his team coming in there to kind of organize the fight and they made some changes to the droids even based on what they wanted to accomplish in the fight. And they had a lot of time to prep it and the VR, all the things we learned in this episode. It's exciting to take all this technical stuff that kind of sometimes went over my head and take it into this one sequence. Joseph, how does this drive home the importance of story and character and discovering who the character is through actions and how the technical stuff can help make that even better?
Yeah. Oh, thank you for thinking of me, because I do love this episode and I do love this fight. I think it's because it is almost everything tied up in a bow that I like about the Mandalorian show. It is about his character, because we have built up that he is a true badass, that he's a great fighter, but he's also willing to take some punches in order to take his adversary down. And he's got this whole bag of tricks, like Rick Famuyiwa says, that it demonstrates his true hatred of droids. So you got that part of the character in it. And then the tee up of this whole thing of Mando's supposed to be such a badass. Is he? Well, let me show you. So then you got all that character stuff, but then it tips into, as much as I love talking about characters and themes, undeniably one of the joys of something like Star Wars is the action. I do just want to see an awesome Mandalorian beat the living hell out of some droids. And there's that spirit of, it's not that we're just telling a character a story and then we have to add some fights, or it's not just we want to see some cool fights and I guess we'll add a story. It's that both are equally important to this show, to this genre. And so to see a scene that demonstrates love for the character side of it, the thematic side of it, and love for the cool action side of it at the same time is really great. And I'm with you that I didn't understand every beat of the technical process. But what I did really get from this is, using this already created kind of video game world, we can either just direct the cameras in a previs way, or we can direct real human actors. And I think that's what was really cool about this moment and why they highlighted it, is to see way back at that pre-visualization, it wasn't people sitting at computers with, you know, Rick leaning over him going, yep, you know, adjust that button so his shoulder's a little higher. It was, he was as a director talking to real human beings going, I want this to feel gritty, so can you kind of roll this way when Mando hits you? And that there's that real in-person back and forth conversation between a director and human beings, and through all the levels of this process that translates to what is finally on screen. And there isn't too much computer to get in the way of the humanity of the director building this with the stunt people and the actors.
Yeah. And look, I will say this. I love those prequels. I love George Lucas with all my heart. And, you know, if this process that he wanted this, if this had been around, I think he would have been able to accomplish all the things he wanted technically, and how to shoot it, and maybe been able to spend a little more time with the actors. And that's a rare me just poking the bear a little bit. But I looked at this, I'm like, yes, this is an extension of what George was trying to do and in many ways did do back there. And it excites me going forward, because this sequence for this episode, it really works. And I'm glad they chose this one as the example of here's all the pieces kind of together and what the result is, if that makes sense. Sorry, George. God, George, I'm sorry.
I don't think you have to be sorry. I think it's been one of his lifelong frustrations, right? That the people working on A New Hope, even with the great artwork by McQuarrie, couldn't quite picture what he pictured in his mind. And I think he got a little closer to that with the prequels, but still had that, you know, those behind the scenes moments of Natalie Portman jumping over, you know, blue things for a reshoot and going, I have no idea. I can't see anything. So I think to get to this point where, he wouldn't have to be frustrated with actors, because he'd just be like, here, let me show you.
Yes.
This is exactly what you're doing. It's not, I have not lost my marbles. Absolutely. This is real.
It's real. A couple more beats left here in our episode. We got what I believe is some sort of confirmation that I even had to check with you off air, Joseph. Like, I don't recall this being, this is something we wanted, but Rick Famuyiwa kind of ends this episode saying, and I get to do this all again in season two. Just give me those scripts. Confirmed to direct, confirmed to have some part of the process. We don't quite know, but it just makes us happy, right, Joseph?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And maybe it'll be super confirmed. But I was a little unclear if they were saying he's going to direct again, or if, since he clearly enjoyed working on some of the fights, if he was doing more some second unit fighting stuff. But we will get that clarification eventually. And I am just thrilled that he's going to be involved again regardless.
Yeah, he just keeps every episode. I love hearing him talk, both on an ASMR level and just a fan appreciating his insight, his skills, and his love for Star Wars. It's been great. Yeah, and hopefully, you know, at this point with the rumored directors, rumored characters, we've got a 30-episode season of Mandalorian 2 coming. We'll have some final thoughts, but final question for you, Joseph. Going back to the storyboards in the early parts of this episode, how much would you pay for a storyboard version of the child?
Oh, man, I would bottle all of my feelings and I would sell them to the highest bidder, which might be real low. Who knows? I don't know what value my feelings have. But man, that was cute and weird and beautiful. I would love to buy the actual piece of paper. Probably not a piece of paper, but a print.
Like when you get the old animation cells, put it on the wall.
Exactly.
We are almost done here. Any final thoughts, Joseph, on episode 14 for us, but episode 6 for the series about the process?
Yeah, it was great. I loved the whole episode. I really loved a little bit of the insight to the early writing process. And I really did love just seeing some of both the storyboards and the animatics. And there's a part of me that's like, hey, Disney, if you're wanting more content for Disney Plus, I would probably watch all of Mandalorian again, just in storyboard and or pre-viz format. So Disney, give it to me.
Give it to us. No, great stuff. And yeah, and just I'm really enjoying this series. And you can tell that they knew whether or not they went to set, whether they set out, said, hey, you know, this is going to be a groundbreaking show for, you know, hopefully because people love it content wise, but also what the process going into it. Let's start filming it. You know, I think there's always BTS stuff on all these, you know, you hire those kind of teams on movies and shows and special features, all those kind of things. But I like that they realize, man, we got something pretty cool here. It's something that it's not just a look at us. It is, hey, this could change a lot of things, and we documented it, and you can feel the excitement every episode of everyone involved who's at those tables, and then the clips with the actors or when they're at the table too. A lot of excitement and passion went into this, and as a Star Wars fan, that just makes me feel good and even feel better about the future. So. On that regard, we're going to wrap up here, Joseph, another episode of the Mandalorian Report. As always out there, if you want to join the conversation, you can follow us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center, or on Instagram, YouTube as well. Merch at TeePublic, teepublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us a couple different ways. Listening, sharing is always there. Podcasts available a lot of different spots, as you know, but you can also go ahead and go to patreon.com/ForceCenter and let us know there. Or if you want to get an audiobook on us, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter, try a free audiobook and support the show as well. Joseph, for you got anything coming up as the world's starting to, in terms of the lockdown, a lot of other things still going on in the world, we know, but lockdown wise, you know, I might be able to get a haircut in a week or two, a lot of things. So anything going on career wise you want to point people at?
I don't have any out in the world things as of yet. I think most of the things that I would have been involved in coming up this summer have been officially canceled. So you can see me on the internet for right now, and maybe taking a walk to a nice cocktail place when that finally opens up in Los Angeles. So look for me at cocktail places. And then internet, you can find me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, or my website, josephscrimshaw.com.
You got to check me out at catnapsack, catnapsack.com. You can, you know, just go there. Yeah, just go there. All right. yeah, I'm trying to think. It's weird. It's weird. I'm not even sure for a lot of different reasons. I'm like, I'm not even sure I want to emerge yet. We'll see. We'll see. But Force Center will be here. Thank you all for listening to the Mandalorian Report. We'll be back next week for more discussions on behind the scenes magic of the Mandalorian. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
The secret to summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Its signature scent of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.